Welcome back to another episode of Lawyer's Daughter. I am the Lawyer's Daughter, Kelsey Freese. We're sitting here with my dad, Steve Freese. What's up, Dad?
Still a lawyer.
Still a lawyer. Thank God. I bet if we woke up and that wasn't the case, I think a lot of people would be very scared.
Not to mention a lot of reimbursements having to be made.
A lot of reimbursements. We might have to return all of our Christmas stuff.
Right.
If and when, hopefully you do retire one day, like, how do you actually do that? Because you seem to have, like, cases 3 years deep at this point right now.
Yeah, well, you would have to, for anyone to retire, they would have to stop intaking cases.
Yeah.
And finish up the cases that they have.
I can see how, because Granddaddy practiced till...
He practiced until he got sick, yeah.
Wow. But I can see how that can happen, especially with this job. I know it's kind of addicting anyway for you, but also just like, you know, your phone never stops ringing. They just keep coming and coming and coming. And I bet a lot of times, well, I'm sure you can see it now, but I bet a lot of times you get something and you think, oh yeah, that's something, you know, I can get taken care of. And then there's like a couple details missing. And then it ends up being something that's like a much longer case.
It's always the case.
Is it?
Yeah, it seems like what starts out to be the simple case are the most intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. I was today when I was in the truck and I was like, we have had this thing forever. And I was thinking about like, the reason I bring this up is because I was thinking about like what would be the first type of crime that someone might encounter. And I always think like, oh, it would probably be something with like a car because you get your license. And so the first time I ever drove a vehicle was the Tundra. And I didn't have anything that happened with the Tundra, but have we told the story on here before about me hitting the cow?
We have not told that story.
Really?
No.
Okay, yeah. Because I was thinking, I was like, yeah, I don't think I've committed any crimes in a vehicle, but I have actually hit a cow before here in Mississippi. So today I was driving around, I was like looking out for the roadkill that I could cause.
I think it was a case of cattle side.
But it was such a pretty day today. I feel like we're starting to kind of get a little... Mississippi likes to do this with us. It likes to kind of trick us into thinking that we're having a melt. And so it was beautiful out today, beautiful, sunny, a little bit warm. And I was like, this is the perfect time for me to get out in the truck and go see some horses.
Yeah, you know, you were always, we'll have to save an episode on your horse career.
Oh my gosh.
I'll have to go back and look through the IRS audits on that. But, it reminds me of your Aunt Kay. Aunt Kay loved horses, just absolutely loved them.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yes. Oh, yes. And she later on had a horse. I can still remember her chasing around in the pasture with sugar cubes, trying to get her horse to come to her. I don't think it ever did.
As a kid?
Okay. As a kid. But when she was very, very young, so let's see, I was probably, I don't know, 6, maybe 7 years old enough to remember well what happened. She was crying. She wanted a horse. She needed a horse. Her good friend Hope Summerhour had a horse. Some other friends had horses, and she wanted a horse because she didn't have one.
You know, so, in most states, like when you're that age, you're like, everybody has a car. I really want a car. In Mississippi, we're like, we need a horse, man.
We need a horse. So, Daddy knew a guy that ran a ranch for Shetland ponies. Now, I don't know if you know much about Shetland ponies.
I know a little something.
But they do not have a good reputation.
they're a little saucy.
So, he arranged with the guy who ran the horse ranch to get, which was only about 8 miles from town, and arranged to get a horse. So one Saturday morning, Daddy brings us all out in the backyard, and I'm there, Mother's there, Kay's there. I'm sure I was about 7 because this was before Jeff was born, and I was 8 years older than Jeff. So we're all out there. He's got a big surprise. And we look over into the churchyard, which the Methodist church was adjacent to our house. And here came Big Bob Harrison pulling behind him a Shetland pony.
Mm.
Now, Big Bob Harrison was a story in and of himself because he was in the Marines, and I think it was in Guam. He was a bodyguard for a general over in Guam.
Wow.
And he was shot in the back during Guam. Short fella, probably about 5'9". And he looked like Mr. Clean.
Oh.
And especially back in those days, Mr. Clean was advertising all over TV. And he had this huge voice. And he was very animated and very loud. And I can remember Dad coming out of his office with me and Mr. Bob being across the square, all the way across, and he would yell out, "Hey, counselor!" And just a great guy. And he had a son, a little Bob, who played baseball with me, who could hit the ball a mile. And so he comes traipsing across the churchyard, across the driveway. Well, Kay and John Booth are going bananas, and I'm sure I was too, simply because they were. I was pretty sure when I saw it, I didn't want any part of it, even at that age.
Yeah, you're not a big horse guy.
No. And so he brings it in, and, you know, this is Kay's horse. However, John Booth's about a year and a half older than Kay, and therefore he was the boss, according to him, and John Booth's my older brother. So John Booth decided that he was going to be the first to ride the horse because he's the oldest. So after crying and faces getting all puffed up, as Judge Coleman used to say, like a swollen dog, and said some other things too that were hilarious. But John Booth gets to ride the horse first. Mr. Bob gets the horse saddle. John Booth gets on it. And he probably, you know, in rodeoing, you have to stay on for 8 seconds on a bucking bronc. John did not reach that Mendoza line as far as he rode the horse. He was on it about a second and a half before the horse bucked. And we had a picnic table out in the back. And as fate would have it, as he came down, he caught his head on the corner of the picnic table, busted it open. I forgot how many stitches he had, but a number of stitches in his head. And the last I saw of that horse was Mr. Bob marching back across the driveway, back across the Methodist lawn. And that was the last I saw of
y'all
that
didn't
horse.
Even get
no,
a chance.
No, I didn't.
Did you even pet it?
No, no, didn't get a pet. Didn't get a chance. I mean, it was over in an instant.
Oh, my God. What did it look like? What was the color of it?
As I recall, it was white and brown spotted. And docile enough walking up, of
right.
course, with Mr. Bob, it couldn't, he was strong as an ox himself. But as soon as John Booth got on him, he went airborne.
Horses are very sensitive to energy, so maybe the horse didn't like that he was cutting in line. And it was like, you're not supposed to be my owner.
He was definitely not Roy Rogers when he got on the horse. Oh. That was not Trigger.
Did he ever get back on a horse?
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did because he was easily led to danger. So I'm sure he did.
Have you ever been thrown off of a horse?
Never been thrown off one. But, you know, the first time your mom came to visit at our house in Ashland, I took her horseback riding, and my horse started galloping, and hers did too, and she was a little behind me, and I said, well, this is great fun, and she's having fun. I turned around, and the horse was there, but she was not. She was not. She had fallen off.
Oh, my God. That explains so much, because growing up, we used to go to dude ranches, and you and I would be having an amazing time. We'd be petting our horses, staying extra time. We'd be like, yeah, let's go. And remember,
our horses were doing tricks and getting up on two legs and prancing around.
And the Dude Ranch people thought we were like, they were like, you're really cool.
Oh, yeah. You know what you're doing. Yeah.
Remember, we went to that Dude Ranch and it was like, I can't remember exactly where it was, but for some reason, it seemed like everyone that was working at the ranch was like Yugoslavian or like Russian.
It was in Georgia.
Yeah, but remember all the people that were working there were like,
it was different.
Speaking English was not their first language, and they were sort of like Slavic something.
I'm not sure they were being paid minimum wage.
I don't know where they came from, but they did not like Mom. And I think the reason they didn't like her was because they could tell she didn't trust herself on the horse. She didn't trust the horse, and so thus they did not trust her riding and being in charge of her. And so they were doing this like trail ride that they were going to take us off the ranch for, and they invited us, but they said that Mom could not come.
Well, and I think Mom was good with that. I think she was good with
that. That's so funny, because I don't know if you know this, but how I actually got started riding horses, do you remember why?
I don't remember the whys. I remember the financial aspects.
Well, sure. The after's a whole different story. Right. But how it got started was Mom wanted to take riding lessons. So we go out there for Mom to take riding lessons. Of course, I see the horse and I pull a John Booth and say, you know, maybe I should
go first.
Just warm the horse up. And I would also like to learn how to ride. And Mom never ended up getting on the horse or learning how to ride. And so it's really my fault that she ended up not being the horsewoman she was destined.
The money was probably best spent on yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the truth is, the falling off of a horse is like a canon event. It's something that changes who you are as a person. And that whole expression, like, you know, fall off the horse, get back on, it's a real thing. It's a real mindset, because there is nothing scarier about it, because it's one of those things you really don't have any control over. I remember the first time I ever fell off, I was riding for many years because I refused to fall off. I would hold on for dear life. But I was in a show, actually. I showed horses growing up, and my horse got spooked and we got pinned against a rail by another horse, and I don't remember really what happened exactly, but I remember waking up kind of, and I mean, it knocked me out, and I was on the ground like, and in this thick dirt, I could feel it like hugged around my body, and people were in my face, and I was just completely shook. But the only thing anyone said to me, I don't even remember them saying, "Hey, Kelsey, are you okay?" They were saying, "All right, you got to get back on. You got to get back on." And I did. I got back on.
Well, it's easier if you do not have a broken leg or a broken arm.
It's a complete miracle. And I've been riding horses out in L.A., but the horse I had been riding threw its owner, and she ended up breaking all of her ribs and arms. And I was jumping, and I was like, I think I might be a little old and fragile for this. I really don't want to get thrown. And so I had to.
And you can't forget Superman, Christopher Reeves, who jumped horses. He was the original movie Superman, and he was jumping horses and broke his neck and became a quadriplegic.
I had no idea that that's how that happened.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. I'm gonna try to keep my feet on the ground. But I guess all this brings us perfectly in today's episode. It is about riding, but not necessarily about riding horses. It's a story involving professional cyclists.
Right. A very bizarre story, indeed.
Such a bizarre story. You know what is the weirdest thing to me about it? And we're going to get into the details of the story, but the person who is, you know, the person who was the killer in this story, his last name was Armstrong. And this, who she killed, was a professional cyclist. So no relation to
Lance Armstrong.
Lance Armstrong. Right. But that was the first thing I was like, what are the odds that there would be a cyclist killing story with someone with the last name Armstrong?
Well, there are a lot of bike riders out there.
Yeah.
A lot. And that's another niche you don't think about.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are into cycling, so, and different types of cycling.
Right. I think this one, they were mountain bike cyclists.
Right.
I kind of hadn't considered was a racing. My mind goes immediately to like the street bike type thing.
Right. And if you watch YouTube and see some of these clips of these people normally wiping out, but yeah. You see some, I mean, it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah. So these are tough people. Now, I don't think the girl whose last name is Armstrong, who was the killer in the story, I don't think she was a cyclist.
I think she may have been, but I don't know if she became one because of her boyfriend.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, how those interests exhibit themselves. But I think the moral to the story is as old as the Bible, and you know, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
It's crazy. Like, so essentially what happened was she and her boyfriend had gone on a break, and they'd been dating for a few years, and then they decided to break up. And during their breakup, he was a professional cyclist, and he met another professional cyclist who I think they called her Mo. And so he met Mo, and they started dating briefly for a bit. And Armstrong found out about it, and she obviously was not happy about it. And so she went over to her house and shot her. Do you know where this all happened? I was just there.
Yes, Austin.
In Austin.
Right.
So to me, like, just breaking it down, which I love to do with you, how unusual is it for women to kill women in this type of scenario? I think, like you've said before, we can imagine a scenario where two men, testosterone is pumping, and they end up in a heated argument and someone gets killed. But for women, I feel like we have talked about it before, women's brains work differently, and especially when they end up killing someone, the methods seem to be different circumstances. What's your take on it?
Well, there are. The thing about it is, I think that you always have to delve into the mental acumen of the person involved. And obviously, she had problems. You know, you can say, well, anybody that kills somebody, you know, has problems. But I think in this case, she was obsessed with her boyfriend. Because, you know, when you mentioned a while ago they decided to break up, blah, blah, I don't think she decided to break up.
Right.
I think
her mind, they were still
together. Yeah, he decided to break up, and he has this fling. I don't think it lasted more than a week.
Yeah.
But he has this fling with this other girl that he had become close to from riding and going to lunch and so on and so forth. And allegedly, she plans to kill her, and what makes it look worse is the fact that soon thereafter, the girl's death, I believe, Armstrong was interviewed by the police.
This blew my mind, actually.
Yes.
So before we get into that, I wanted to ask, were you able to see if the circumstances of her shooting? So she did. She went over to her house and she shot her. Was it point blank? Was it at a distance? Did they say in what part of her body that they shot her?
I think it was close range. And the reason I read an article where one of the shots, the medical examiner felt like the shot was fired from above her, while the assailant was standing, kind of a coup d'etat shot.
Whoa.
And I think she was shot a number of times and retreated, and then when she couldn't go any further, she was killed.
What does that say when someone shoots multiple times?
It's emotion. It's somebody that has a grudge. It's revenge, it's hate, it's all the things investigators look for.
Right.
You know, someone who is shot once, there could be numerous explanations for it. Self-defense, accidental, a number of defenses, a defective weapon, yada, yada, yada. But in this case, she's questioned by the police and then disappears.
I wonder how the police even found her, because it seems like if they understand the circumstances, they're like, this is a very important person that we need to be looking for. And how they then found her, interviewed her, and then released her. Explain to me how that would, how that could happen.
Well, I think when they interviewed her initially, it would have been due to the fact that she was the ex-girlfriend of the last guy to have seen her alive.
Because they probably would have contacted him immediately.
Oh, yes. And of course, he would have been probably coming to them. Mm. And as people would do whenever a loved one or somebody they care about is hurt or killed. And so they find out from her, from him, that, I was dating this other girl, and then I started dating her, and here's our activities that night. And then they go to the cell phones. And they go to the cell phones, and one of the interesting things they found concerning her cell phone was that it had been turned off, either turned off or on airplane mode at the time of the killing. So, if I'm an investigator, I'm going to look at those cell records, and I'm going to go back at least a year. How many times was that cell phone deactivated during a year? And I think you're going to find, like your phone, like my phone, like your husband's phone, that it's not turned off. It's very rare that it's turned off if you're on an airplane or something like that. Mm-hmm. But then that can be verified. So that got them hot on her trail. Excuse me. So then what happens? Where does she go, Cal?
I don't know. Oh, so they let her, so they capture her and, or not capture her, they interview her.
Right.
They release her. And I mean, she had to have been counting her lucky stars. She was like, this, I'm not going to, just head home and wait for them to put two and two together. So she hightails it to Costa Rica.
But first, she goes up north to where her sister lived.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, she goes up north to where her sister lives and apparently stole her sister's passport.
Okay, I was wondering where, she had gotten a
passport. Right, because, I don't know if an alert had been put out to home security at that time, but anyway, she goes under this passport. She goes to Costa Rica. So when the investigators are doing what they do, they're saying, okay, she's got a sister up here. There's an airport, let's say in Newark, and let's check the passenger list. Well, her name didn't show up because she's flying under a false passport.
Right.
So later they figure that out, and she goes to Costa Rica. She goes to Costa Rica, and you would think, well, okay, here's a picture of the girl, and she's in Costa Rica. That shouldn't be hard to find. No.
No. I mean, she really had thought this through in so many ways. She goes to Costa Rica also. If you think about it, there's thousands of hostels in Costa Rica. So, I mean, this is going to be a difficult search. Even when they find out that she's there, they're going to have to get there, and there's going to be a lot of things to turn over. But then at the same time, like you brought up, they've got a picture of her, so they start looking for her. And, she's got blonde hair and da-da-da-da. Well, no, she doesn't.
And when they started looking for her, the first three people they saw all had blonde hair because she's got the American influence there in Costa Rica, and people going there for various reasons, some to be off the grid, some to go on vacation, just so many reasons. And they were stymied.
Yeah. And so they soon figure out, we're looking for the wrong person. This picture isn't going to help because she dyes her hair brown and gets a nose job.
Well, before then, she cut her hair.
And she cut it.
She cuts her hair. And which tells you, during this entire time, she felt like the hellhounds were on her trail.
Right.
So you can tell that she's constantly thinking about that. She's very limited in information she gives to acquaintances there. And so she's weaving this background story in her mind while at the same time saying, I've got to change my appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And she has plastic surgery.
I mean, that it's crazy. It's crazy she was actually able to do that. But I guess, you know, I don't know what it's like to have plastic surgery in Costa Rica. But it seems like it'd be a lot of paperwork.
Well, it seems like it'd be a lot of money.
And money.
So I don't know, and I don't know yet where the money was coming from, but she had to have an influx of money somehow.
Right.
Because she was going to be a yoga instructor.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, you know, they're knocking out 100K a year in Costa Rica.
Right. So does this feed further into the storyline that this was very premeditated, that she would have had to have had known that she was probably going to get questioned, known that as soon as that happened, she was going to need to flee, get the passport. She knew to go to Costa Rica, and she obviously had a... Or do you think she was flying by the seat of her pants?
I think half and half. I think the crime being one of passion wasn't thought out that well.
Mm.
I thought it was... It looks like, okay, I'm going to go to her house and wait on her to come home, and then I'm going to kill her. Well, after the dirty deed is done, she has to think, now what?
Mm.
What next? Are they going to catch me? Surely they are. She probably became paranoid, and then she starts thinking of how am I going to get somewhere where they can't find me?
Right. Explain to me from the legal side of things, how things work. So when they find out that someone that they are tracking has gone to another country, how many people do it's the U.S. Marshal?
U.S. Marshal Service, yeah.
So how many people is common for them to send to another country to, like, start this investigation, and what are the methods?
I don't know if there's a commonality there. I would say that they would always send at least two. They would make contact with the local authorities, tell them why they're there and what they're doing, especially if it's a foreign citizen coming into another country. There would not be that worry that there are going to be leaks inside the local police force.
Right.
So they would go to them, tell them what they're doing, and begin their search.
I just thought it was genius. So they knew, the U.S. Marshals knew that she was into yoga. She was a big yogi, and they probably knew that she was going to need to find a way to make some money. So they created this Facebook page saying, hey, we're staying at this hostel. We're looking for a yoga teacher to start ASAP. They put it up on Facebook. Not, 24 hours later, she responds to this Facebook ad, tells them a place to meet her, and shows up, and there she is. I could not believe that this worked.
Well,
I couldn't believe they thought of it. It was genius.
You know, they found her in a restaurant, and it's kind of like the old Untouchable movies where somebody goes in to make an ID. And one of them went in to make an ID, and I think he started off with a Spanish phrase to throw her off and ask her, hey, how you doing, or something like that. She didn't respond in Spanish, and then he went on, and he felt in his mind 100% it was her. It did not look exactly like her. Mm-hmm. But he felt that she was the suspect, and then they move in and arrest her.
Incredible, though. I'm like, you know, that's just so something you can see them sitting around. They're like, why don't we just, like, put up a Facebook? You know, it's like how we were talking about
Sure. Social
media, like, being used in cases and stuff. And it's like, kind of, you can use a tool like two ways, you know, like to commit crimes, and then you can also use it to solve crimes. Very interesting to see it play out like that. But of course, that's not where this story ends. This girl, she is slippery. She's super slippery.
Right.
So they get her in Costa Rica and they bring her back. And you're going to have to refresh my mind. I bet you know more of the details of this. But basically, they were transporting her somewhere?
You know, I'm not sure about that aspect of
okay.
the story. I only followed it up to the time that she was arrested. Of course, when you're arrested in a foreign country, you have to be extradited. One of the things and the most important things in order for an extradition to take place, you have to identify that person. Mm-hmm. So it's probably a little more dicey, and they would have done that through fingerprints right. and things like that.
Well, so what I was referring to was, so they arrest her, they get all of that done, and then she has to have a doctor's appointment. So they take her out.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, two deputies take her out, and they're transporting her from the patrol car. And she slips the grip and takes off running. Like, what? This woman's crazy. Like, what was she thinking?
Well, that's a good... Maybe she's going to use an insanity defense.
Seriously genius if she does. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, can't fault her. But yeah, she makes it like a block... And then the local police finally grab her, but...
If she had gotten away, she would have had to find a new profession rather than teaching yoga.
Exactly.
I think she had blown that cover.
She completely blown that cover completely.
Right.
But, I mean, I was just like, this story just goes on and on and on. So she's sentenced to, I think, 90 years, which... You know, we've talked about other cases on here where people are serving life when people are serving life with no parole or death penalty. So why Texas? I would think it would be a death penalty state, is it?
It's the way whether she was charged first degree murder, second degree murder, murder with a firearm. There are all types of additives they can pile on, but mm-hmm. she gets this. I think it's between 30 and 90 years sentence she gets, which means that possibility. Remember, she's young.
Mm-hmm.
She's young. I believe she's in her early 30s.
I didn't catch it.
I think, and unless I'm confusing her with someone, but she's young. And, you know, after 30 years, let's say she is 34 for argument's sake, maybe in 30 years she would go before the parole board and they would look at the severity of her act, what her record was in prison, and whether she had any write-ups or not or caused problems or tried to escape. Or
right.
anything like that, and make a decision on whether to grant her parole.
Something tells me I don't think she's going to have a clean record in jail. She sounds super slick.
She may have some difficulties.
It may get dicey in there for her. What do you think, again, bringing up women committing these crimes, do you feel like they're a little bit more, like, do you think they're a little softer on women? And when they're charging them?
Well, no.
Like, I just don't understand why she wouldn't. Why death penalty would be off the table for her in Texas specifically,
well,
I guess.
There are a number of reasons for that. It's the cost of the prosecution. It's the whether or not they feel like that under their criteria it qualifies for a death penalty case. So they had their reasons. Mm-hmm. The prosecutors had their reasons, and
you don't think there's a leniency for
I don't see it. I don't see a leniency. A lot of people may think so. I think if there's any more of an understanding in a trial part of if you're representing a female rather than a male, is that I think people can understand more readily how females can feel dominated mm-hmm. by another person.
Right.
In other words, if it's you kill your boyfriend, you kill your husband, and the defense is battered spouse abuse, people can understand. I always try to put it like this. If you're a man and... And let's say you're 5'2" tall and you're a man and your wife is 6'3". She's stronger than you. She is looked upon by society and some religions as the head of the household, mm-hmm. as the boss. And what defense do you have against that person if they get rough with you.
Right.
And the only defense a woman has is her tongue, and that, you know, she can snap back and say you're no good. And, well, that doesn't always work because mm-hmm. it may aggravate the larger party who can beat the snot out of you
right.
anytime they want to.
But in this case, particularly though, woman on woman, that's sort of like, for me, I totally get what you're saying, and yeah. I agree, and like at sitting on a jury. But for me, like, women on women crime seems not like something you hear about a lot. You hear a lot about, you know, domestics, but something like this to me just doesn't seem like something that you hear about that much. It's kind of unusual.
I think it's not the norm.
Right.
Okay. I don't know if I would place the term unusual, but it's not the norm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, how are they going to be on her? Well, we already know how the system is going to be on her. I guess the question is, how is the prison system going to be on her?
Interesting.
And I would think that a lot of the female prisoners would treat her with respect.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's a sort of, I don't blame you, you know? Mm. That thing, you know, I would have done the same thing, that type of mentality.
Wow.
And remember, she's coming in there with some street cred.
Yeah.
She's killed somebody.
Yeah.
Okay? So I'm not sure you would want to cross her
right.
if you were another prisoner.
She's got a story to tell, too. They're going to be like, yeah, she's ballsy. It's some Orange is the New Black type.
Oh, yeah.
type
yeah.
thing going on. It's so interesting. So it was in the news recently. Was it because she just got that sentence? They just sentenced
yes,
her?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, man.
But, you know, she might be running the place in a year from now. Who knows?
Who knows?
Right. She may be a shock caller.
Oh, my gosh. I think, did you watch Orange is the New Black?
Some of it. Yeah, I can only watch a little bit of it.
I know.
Yeah.
But that is it's an interesting concept because, like, we were kind of talking about Mule Man, and like, there's all these stories that happen to people in prison that you almost are like, I wish someone was in there writing these stories and or even just capturing it. Because it's stuff you can't make up.
You might end up with a pencil in your ear.
This is so true. Well, I don't think she'll be cycling while she's in prison.
If she is, it's going to be a stationary bike.
It's going to be a stationary bike.
Right.
All right, guys. That's another episode from us. We'll see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye.